Blog Talk Radio.
There have been a ton of fireworks in the league office. I'll have this and more on the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. And that's right, we are here live on Blog Talk Radio, thanks to Impact Media. Appreciate all the guys involved in that, getting us on here each and every week so we can talk about the NFL, and of course we can talk about your Atlanta Falcons. I am your host, Jeremy the Impact York. Thanks for joining us. It's going to be just me today. I believe Reggie's surfing out on the West Coast, I believe. The coach is out on assignment. We hope to have him back in the next couple weeks. Good to be back in the studio. Been a lot of things going on where we haven't necessarily been around the studio, so it's good to be back in here. We can talk to you guys. Of course, if you are an Impact Media fan, and of course, I'm pretty sure you all are, you know that we did the season finale on Tuesday of Revolution Zone, all about the Texas Revolution of the Champions Indoor Football League. Just want to commend the effort of all the players and coaches and front office people and, of course, Sonny Clark, the voice of the Revolution, for coming on and being a part of that show. It was a really special season. Came just a few points short of the championship, but it's the best the organization has done performance-wise, and this team is so loaded with talent that I hope most of them stick around. If not, it's because they went on to bigger and better things, so good luck to all of them. And, of course, you guys know the fun little link that will be sent out on social media. I believe it's already out there in case you want to click and listen along. If you are, welcome. And, of course, if you've called into the show or if you'd like to call into the show, our number is 347-826-7448. Got a few things we just want to go over today. So, obviously, if you do have any questions, comments, suggestions, funny jokes that you can actually tell on live radio, feel free to call us. We'd love to hear from you. Once again, 347-826-7448. Had to make sure to get the number right. It's been kind of a weird media week, honestly. Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk come back from his vacation and proceeded to give the wrong first three digits to the Pro Football Talk number, which kind of had some people confused. I'm sure there's a construction company or maybe even a club in Missouri or something that is curious why everybody keeps calling and asking about Tim Tebow, but I was able to correct that. And then, now I've been a part of some awkward interviews, whether they've been, sometimes throughout school and such things like that. Sometimes in the media, you're going to I'm not even the best interviewer sometimes. I try to be the best I can and always improve, and obviously so does everybody. But I don't know if you guys caught the Jim Harbaugh interview, him being the new head coach of Michigan. The Jim Harbaugh interview with Colin Cowherd. Now, to say it was awkward might not be given all the due that it is. If you get a chance to check it out, by all means do. Colin's a pro. I'm trying to figure out a way to say this because I'm a big Michigan fan. We all know that. I do believe Jim Harbaugh is the answer that they need right now to fix this program. But Jim, if you didn't want to do the interview or you didn't have anything you really wanted to say, then just politely decline. You know how many times we get politely declined in the media? It's fine. We understand. Not everybody wants to talk at the given times that we try to get people to talk. And I'm not saying it was 100% Jim Harbaugh here, but probably 75-80% of it was. And Colin did the smart thing. he knows that as a listener, if I'm listening to his show, or if you're listening to his show, or it doesn't matter who's listening to his show, as long as people are, you don't want to hear these rough interviews like this. So he cut ties when he could. Thank Jim for being on, and you know, and did what he had to. I mean, kind of is what it is at that point. But like I said, if you get a point, I think it's probably on Colin's website or ESPN or probably YouTube or something by now. Anyway, it's just so weird. I don't know that I've ever seen Colin flustered like this, for one. But two, it's just so, there's not even a word to put on it. That's why I'm having such a rough time trying to even get into it. But, of course, that was an interview on a different show. And like I said, Colin handled it like a pro, because Colin is a pro. And one of my favorites. I'm not just defending him there. Yeah, so, I mean, there's been times I've had interviews like that, and I've been on both sides of that, where maybe it's not necessarily the best environment that you want to be in. You're not always going to have the best situation, you know, when doing an interview. You know, I'm trying to keep this one from going awkward at the moment, because, like I said, if you get a chance to check it out for sure. But moving on, we're going to move on from that. There was a lot of fireworks going on in the NFL, especially today. There were four players who were asked to skip the first few games for their prospective teams, and all of them substance-related. Of course, I'm talking about Sheldon Richardson of the Jets, Antonio Gates of the Chargers, Rolando McClain of the Cowboys, and Detonny Jones of the Packers. And, you know, let's start right there with the Packers. Jones is a defensive end for Green Bay. I believe he was a rookie last year. He was kind of one of those breakout candidates last year. You know, had some really good times, had some times where he showed a lot of promise, but never really won over a starting spot. That happens, especially younger players and everything. And on the Packers, it's kind of a rough position. But now that B.J. Raji is healthy again, because let's be honest, we can't wait for him to put another in the end zone to see the Raji shuffle. But, you know, Josh Boyd was also pretty solid. You know, they have depth. So Jones being out is really going to hurt Jones more than it is the Packers. And it's just one game anyway for him. But, you know, the new policy is what it is. And once he gets popped, hopefully this is the only time. Hopefully it was just maybe a prescription that he didn't realize had something in it. You know, such things like that. Because I don't know how the NFL structures things. I know it's not quite like the Olympic Committee. You know, you got to think back to, was it 2002, 2006, somewhere in there, maybe 2004. I can't remember the exact year. There was the top gymnast, women's gymnast, who had her medal stripped away because of a failed drug test. Now, they didn't really tell you at the time what it was, but I heard the other day what it was and actually looked this up. It was basically an Advil. An Advil, I know. You're thinking, Jeremy, how in the world could somebody get kicked out for an Advil? Well, I'm kind of right there with you with that one anyway. The reason that the Advil popped it is it has that and ibuprofen and I'm not sure Tylenol has an active ingredient, but it has a particular substance that was on the ban list. So, unfortunately, even though she's busting her rear to try to, you know, win the medal for her country, apparently, you know, next time you fall down and you're an Olympian, you're just going to have to tough it out. You can't take that Advil. But moving back to the NFL world here, like I said, Jones is only one game, so my guess is that it was possibly marijuana. We kind of all know there's kind of that culture coming here. So far, it's not on the not banned list, but for right now, it is. So he'll serve his game there. Now, that's just my speculation because they've not released anything saying what his actually was. Moving on to the Dallas Cowboys linebacker, which, of course, would be Rolando McClain, who had a resurgence last year. And I believe he was a finalist for Comeback Player of the Year. And that Dallas defense, you know, they were supposed to be arguably the worst in the league. And part of the reason they were not was because their offense stayed on the field so much, allowing for when the defense was on there, it was very limited. Very good strategy to downplay the negatives, accentuate the positives. Will they be able to do it this year? I don't know. I'm actually waiting. I happen to know a kind of field reporter right now who's covering them during camp and waiting to hear from her about some of the things she's seen. We should have her on the show hopefully maybe in the next month or so. We're still nailing that down. Not gonna. The only clue you get there is it's a her, and she's a good friend of the show. So, but as far as McClain, you know, once again, his the four game. This is not the first time he's been suspended. These kinds of things happen. I'm not saying it's right what he did, but, you know, at some point, guys, know what you're putting in your body, because at some point it's a risk you're taking that will catch back up to you. You know, too many pro wrestlers and too many football players and hockey players all passed away way too young from putting certain things in their body that they shouldn't have. And that's me on the soapbox, and I'll happily get off the soapbox to tell you that the Cowboys shouldn't have much of an issue here either, because they have three players who have played middle linebacker before, including the returning from injury Sean Lee, who, if you're smart, keep him on the outside to make sure to avoid injury or further injuries. They got the second-year player Anthony Hitchens, and then journeyman Jasper Brinkley. Pretty much, like I said, if you put Lee, you know, on a weak side or something like that, it'll downplay the injuries and help him recover a lot faster and get back to the monster he was becoming. So between Hitchens and Brinkley are going to be who fills in for McClain. I would probably give the edge to Brinkley because of experience, but Hitchens could easily win it. You know, obviously, I hope to hear more about the Cowboys along with you guys here soon. Moving on, I'm gonna leave the Chargers for the end because I believe that's the biggest impact of all these four. So we're gonna move on to the Jets. Defensive lineman Sheldon Richardson is going to miss four games, I believe, as well. He had 144 tackles in his first two NFL seasons. That's a lot. That's the most ever, I'm pretty sure. Won Defensive Rookie of the Year in 2013. That's been a great draft pick for them. Was a Pro Bowler in 2014, and they also led the Jets in sacks last season. Pretty much, him and Muhammad Wilkerson have been just the, by far, all-stars of this kind of diminished defense that's currently being rebuilt. I actually like some of the things they're doing there. Todd Bowles is going to put together a good one anyway. But between Wilkerson and Richardson, I would say are the two huge bright spots for the Jets. Of course, Richardson's not going to miss a handful of games. They're also prepared for a life without Richardson for four games because they drafted Leonard Williams, who was pretty much the top defensive guy last year coming out of the draft. And, of course, you got Damon Harrison, or Snacks, as he likes to be called. You know, that's what this defensive line is going to be. It's going to be Williams, Wilkerson, and Harrison out of the gate. And, of course, when Richardson comes back, he'll be added into the mix, which makes that defensive line arguably one of the best in the league as far as top to bottom overall. Just two beast rushers and two guys who just maul any kind of lineman that gets in front of them. And not to be left out, Antonio Gates of the Chargers who is a their tight end, obviously, their standout tight end. I believe he's 35, just had a birthday about a week ago or so. So happy birthday, Antonio. Unfortunately, the NFL gave you a four-week vacation early on. You know, this guy's probably future Hall of Famer. He's just a – but the only thing that to me kind of stands against Antonio Gates in his career is that he played in the era of Tony Gonzalez, who was just that much better than everybody else. But Antonio Gates at any other time would be considered, you know, the top tight end of his era for sure. Phillip Rivers loves to use him on checkdowns and pretty much he is the Phillip Rivers what Jason Witten is to Tony Romo, that security blanket for sure. But that's what a good quarterback needs. It's something he can count on where on third down, he knows where the ball's going. You know, think Hines Ward in Pittsburgh. If you got somebody like that, then third down conversions aren't that bad. Of course, similar to all three of the other teams, the Jets are maybe okay without Gates for the four games because they have Ladarius Green. Green's pretty physical, got good hands. I'm not sure. I don't think he's quite what Antonio Gates does in the end zone, but he has a lot of speed, can beat defenders right off the block. So, for the most part, all four of these teams have people that can step in, but still, it amazes me that here's four players that we all know their names, their household names to this point, and they've already got popped this early. That's ridiculous. I mean, nobody should get any kind of substance, you know, issues or any kind of suspensions because by now you should know, don't take the stuff. But apparently, whatever they took, I think McClain apologized, but beyond that, I haven't heard anything from the other three. We'll just have to hang on to that and figure out, you know, what they're going to do from here on out. I do want to move on to another quick story real quick, and it's because a lot of you guys have reached out to us and sent in text, emails, messages, and the such, and this one keeps coming up, so I wanted to bring it out and give you the quick answer pretty much. A lot of people said, what kind of impact is not having Jimmy Graham going to have on Drew Brees as he's kind of in the probably the last run of his you know, tenure? Well, a lot of people would say his number one target, you know, it's just like Gates or Tony Gonzalez or any of those. Jimmy Graham is a standout tight end. And, you know, Drew Brees loved throwing to him because they were pretty much on the same page, kind of the same way Gronk is with Brady, so they just kind of look at each other, know what's going on, and go from there. But Saints fans, I wouldn't worry about it too much. Apparently, Drew Brees and Josh Hill have been doing quite well in the offseason and pretty much already have a good rapport to where they pretty much just look at each other and know what the other's going to do. So Saints fans, don't worry about it. Is Josh Hill Jimmy Graham? No. But with an offense that's evolving that seems like it's more ground and pound than aerial attack, Josh Hill's going to do just fine. He could have anywhere between 6 to 10 touchdowns. In fact, my guess would probably be he'll probably have about 7, which means that he probably is not going to be available in any fantasy draft that I try to be a part of. But we'll have some fantasy stuff coming up later this summer that we'll talk about from there. I did want to talk about the supplemental draft that is coming up soon, and I believe there are 7 players who are eligible for that, and we went over a couple of them, or I think we've talked about a few of them. And, of course, the last person picked in the supplemental draft was when the Cleveland Browns in 2012 picked wide receiver Josh Gordon, who, as you can tell by now, because of his off-the-field issues and substance issues, is pretty much why he was in the supplemental draft. Some of the players involved here, let me make sure I can get the list here. Clemson offensive tackle Isaiah Battle, who a handful of teams have expressed interest in. West Georgia, right down the road here, defensive tackle Dalvin Stuckey, and, of course, defensive end Darius Caldwell. Houston defensive end Eric Island. UConn tight end Sean McQuillan. Kansas defensive back Kevin Short. And North Carolina Central wide receiver Adrian Wilkins. Supplemental draft will be on July 9th. Representatives from 16 different NFL teams attended the pro day workout for Stuckey and Caldwell in West Georgia, or at West Georgia in Carrollton earlier today. If you got 16 teams looking, it seems like somebody may throw something out. And for everybody who thinks or who recognizes Eric Island's name, he spent 4 years in the minors for the Toronto Blue Jays after after signing with Texas A&M in 2007. So you may have seen him in the farm system before. There's actually a couple other guys from the NFL that, as they're waiting those summer calls, are actually playing some baseball. If I'm not mistaken, Isaiah Battle, who is the top prospect pretty much in this supplemental draft, and you don't have to take anybody in this draft, and if you do, I'm pretty sure you give up, I think you go for draft pick. I'm not sure which one it would be. I think it's a second or a third round pick next year, which, you know, could possibly keep the Falcons from being involved because they've already given up one for the Northgate debacle that cost the organization Roddy White, the front office guy. Isaiah Battle, though, he has a pro day scheduled for July 7th at Clemson, and I believe Wilkins is going to do one on the following day in Durham, North Carolina. The main guy that's been reporting on this is Dan Parr from NFL.com, so easiest thing to do is to go on there and follow along with him, as I'm sure he may do another roundup about all the guys. But we're going to jump to a break real quick, and when we come back, as promised, I'm going to go team by team and tell you what a pretty promising, you know, a pretty stout Vegas sports book, some of the odds they're giving your favorite teams to win the Super Bowl. So if you are in a place where you can put money down on your favorite team or on a good line, you may want to stay tuned for right after the break here. But I am Jeremy the Impact York, and we'll be back on the other side of the break. And we're back here on having some sort of hack or some kind, or somehow we're channeling the NFL Network. We're not sure how, because we're not affiliated with them. The phones are ringing off the hook. I'm sure it's Tim Tebow related or something. But no, what I wanted to get to next, as we get back here under the end zone banner, is supposedly the only person not signed out of the first round of this year's draft is Marcus Mariota. And it had been talked about the other day by a lot of people that there was a clause that the Titans had put in his contract if he signed it, saying that he could not serve, as I guess between shark attacks and the fact that you can actually get seriously hurt while surfing was a big concern to them. But, you know, sources, or as ESPN likes to say, sources, which I will directly attribute to somebody who happens to be there who they don't want to mention the name of. Anyway, says that there's no real truth to that, and that the hang-up has nothing to do with surfing. To me, the longer this goes, the more it says about Mariota and the Titans. Now, sure, you're trying to hold out for the best deal and trying to get everything hammered out, but Mariota's pretty clear, or he should be pretty clear, on what the Titans want from him. He's their guy. They pretty much put Zach Mettenberger on the sideline holding a clipboard, which, as I still say, I think there's three or four or five different teams that should make a play for him, because I think it's not just upside. I think he's better right now than at least four other starters in the league. But if you're Mariota, you got drafted by Tennessee, number two. So if you want to know how much money you're going to make, you look at number one, Jameis Winston, you look at number three, and you pretty much go, I'm somewhere in between this. It's pretty much spelled out anyway in the collective bargaining agreement, so I don't know why it's taking so long to do this. And at this point, if he's not under contract, technically he doesn't have to be, I'm pretty sure he doesn't have to be actually at the camps, even if they're mandatory, because technically they're mandatory to people under contract. So if he's not under contract, then he doesn't have to show up. The problem I have with this is this should be the time when he's there learning the playbook, getting used to the guys he'll be throwing to. I mean, the Titans have been at the bottom for a good handful of years. Them and the Jaguars have, you know, sometimes been the laughingstock or the jokes of the NFL is to just how bad they are. Well, Jacksonville's done everything to turn this around, and they're on the up and up right now. We talk about that on Jaguar Zone here on Impact Media. But if you're the Tennessee Titans, you're trying to get that new franchise guy. You haven't really had a franchise guy since Steve McNair. I don't know, how long was that, 15 years ago? I'm sure it was less than that, but still, it had to be at least 10 or 12. So you're trying to get this guy under contract so that he can learn the playbook, so he can become the star you want him to, and I don't know what the hang-up is. At some point, they need to hammer this out. I believe July 19th is when training camp opens. They need to kind of have it done by then. If they don't, well, see how it goes. But NFL.com had a story the other day that talked about, I believe, the top six people that are under pressure. I think it was their way of just making in reference to Queen, who I will have to say is arguably one of the best bands in history, my personal opinion. But they made a short list of people who was under the most pressure and who needed to really step up. They mentioned Andy Dalton. Okay, well, to me, Andy Dalton, the best thing he needs to do is win a playoff game. But before you start downing Andy Dalton, you got to look at it. He's been in the playoffs, I believe, every year since he's been in the league, like 3, 4, 5 years now in a row. And before you go, well, it's because the Bengals aren't good enough to win a playoff game, or he's not ready to take that step. Matt Ryan only has one win, does he not? He has one playoff win, and nothing personal, but Matt Ryan is loads, just absolute loads ahead of Andy Dalton as far as overall ability. Dalton's good in the scheme he's in. Matt Ryan's exceptional in the one he's in. You know, I could sit here and compare these two all day long. What Andy Dalton needs to do is continue to do what he's doing. They're building a great team around him and some of the other guys. Jeremy Hill still is a running back who was the breakout last year. the Bengals are going to be fine. They're in a rough division, but all you got to do is make it in the playoffs. And then you just got to win 3 or 4 games. I know that sounds really easy the way I just said that. But so far, they're able to make it there. They got to win that first game. And as soon as they win that game, the monkey's off the back. They can keep going. I mean, he's throwing to A.J. Green. They keep trying to say, oh, A.J. McCarron's the backup. Maybe he's starting to impress people enough to where he'll take over. I doubt it. It's not the first one, A.J. McCarron, because he is a solid quarterback, but there's no way that you would bench Andy Dalton unless he threw like 17 interceptions in the first 4 weeks or something like that. By the way, if he does that, do not attribute that to me saying that. The next guy they say is kind of under the gun, Peyton Manning. Of course, we all know that window is closing on the Peyton Manning era. It looked like to me, just like Blake Bortles at the end of last season, and this is where a lot of the comparisons may stop currently because I haven't seen enough of Blake to put him anywhere close to this, but towards the end, Blake's arm looked a little dead. Toward the end of the season, Peyton threw up more ducks than that little dog in the video game. I can still see him laughing now. It looked like Peyton just, his arm went dead on him. And it happens. And if a lot of off-seasons recover, it happens to a lot of pitchers. You just see them where they pitch too much in a given short frame of time. You know, Peyton will be fine. If Peyton's arm strength wasn't where he could make the throws he wants to, he wouldn't have came back. I do think this is still his last season. So if you get a chance to watch him, definitely go out there and try to see that. But he is under a lot of heat because it's kind of put Denver in a weird spot. Denver has to keep Peyton Manning in because A, he's Peyton Manning. B, he's Peyton Manning. C, A, and B. And D, I don't know how sure they are on Brock Osweiler because this could be kind of what Green Bay did a couple years ago to where they finally said, hey, Brett Favre, we're kind of tired of the whole we're not sure if you're playing or not. You're not sure if you're playing or not. We're going to go with this Aaron Rodgers kid because they knew what they had in Aaron Rodgers. They had a good idea based off of how he was in practice, how he was in game-like situations. So, it's kind of got Denver kind of between a rock and a hard place, so we'll have to see what they do. Unless Peyton's arm absolutely falls off, and I mean literally falls on the turf, he's going to finish this season out, and we'll have to assess it from there. I don't know that Denver's going to be good enough this year anyway. I think they're going to – they could barely make it into the playoffs, I think. I don't know. It depends because they're kind of in an interesting division. We'll get to that on a future episode. The next person that's kind of under some pressure, Odell Beckham Jr., because he had such a great breakout campaign, had just ridiculous catches. He did start the year injured, so I don't know if he's already offset the Madden cover curse. But the kid's got a lot of talent. He makes Eli Manning a better quarterback. And if they can get him and Victor Cruz, the 1-2 punch up there, you could see the Giants make a run at knocking off the Cowboys and Eagles in that division because we all know the Redskins are probably going to get a top-5 pick next year. There's too much mess, and I feel like it could cost Coach Gruden his job, but there's going to be a handful of jobs open anyway, so, Jay, you're going to be fine. You got Ken Whisenhunt, of course, who's under some pressure because he's the head coach of the Titans that we just talked about. Not even knowing, you know, at the current moment, he's pretty much got Mettenberger doing a lot of the stuff because Mariota hasn't signed. He's trying to bring this team up from the ashes, although it seems like they're still on fire. I'm not saying Tennessee can't bounce back. I'm just saying I need to see more. I look forward to seeing them a handful of times this year. There's a good chance I'll get to see at least a couple Titans games. But Ken Whisenhunt is the guy who could really bring them back from this. It's just kind of step 1.2 here. You got to get Mariota under contract. And as soon as you do that, I feel like some of the other dominoes will fall into place. They upgraded. They got a lot of good people that they added in free agency, and they had a pretty good draft. They should be better than they were last year. I know that's not saying much because the bar wasn't that high. But either way, Ken Wisenhunt didn't become the head coach to be a lame duck. So, you know, Ken knows what he needs to do. Blake Bortles is also on this list. We've kind of addressed him a little bit. I kind of said the same thing. For a rookie who wasn't supposed to start, and then Chad Henne just couldn't quite execute the way he needed to. So, obviously, they brought him in. You know, brought Blake in a little early. Now, he's not the next Blaine Gabbert, for sure. Nothing personal Blaine Gabbert. Met the guy, super awesome guy. I think he got put in too quick, wasn't ready, and never recovered. He took his confidence. And anybody in sports, when their confidence is gone, if they can't find it, they're going to be out pretty quick. Maybe Blaine found it in San Francisco. We'll have to see. But as far as Bortles, like I said, I felt like towards the end that his arm kind of went dead on him. I think he threw a lot more passes than his arm was ready for, which in Jaguar zone I mentioned almost on a game-to-game basis. I always say the magic number to me is about 32-33 is about the maximum number of passes that I would like my quarterback throwing in a given game. Now, overtime is overtime, but I'm talking in four quarters of the game. I really don't want my quarterback throwing more than about 10 times per quarter. I think Bortles top 40 a good handful of times. Actually, I want him probably about 8 throws a quarter, in all honesty. Had to throw a lot, and that's not including warm-up. That's not including, it's almost like a pitch count in baseball. There's certain, with rookies and with second and third-year guys, I just don't want them throwing all that much. Hell, I don't want Tom Brady throwing more than 35 times a game. But his arm is a little more seasoned. You know, Matt Stafford could probably throw up in the 40s and be okay. But even him, I wouldn't want to throw more than about 35 times because it just wears on your arm. Those are elite throws that I'm talking about. But Bortles will progress. He's got just super weapons all around him. They were able to go out and get Julius Thomas, which will help as far as another weapon. And he's got Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson to throw to, so he'll be fine. Jacksonville fans, we'll talk more about this next week. And then, of course, they talk about A.J. And, nope, we're not talking about A.J. McCarron. We already talked about him. We're talking about Andre Johnson. You know, a lot of people compare him to the way Falcons fans looked at Steven Jackson as, maybe he's the missing piece. But also, as Falcons fans found out, you need to make sure there's something left in the tank. I think Steven played through a lot of injuries here in Atlanta, and I think that's why it didn't work out. But he is playing on Indy, where he can probably be the third or fourth option for Andrew Luck and still be fine. I still have Indy as a perennial Super Bowl favorite, which we'll get into here in a second. But, Andre Johnson, his last few tenures, or his tenure in Houston needed to come to a close anyway. He was slowly being worked out of the system, a little light, whether intentionally or not. I think he's a good fit for Andrew Luck, and we'll have to see how that develops. It'll either be boom or bust, and we'll know pretty quickly. Fantasy buyers beware. But as promised, I do have a list from Bovada from Las Vegas. The odds to win the 2016 Super Bowl. And then also I'm going to get into the number of games that they think each team's going to win. And we'll go from there. I'm going to start at the bottom. Both these teams at 200-1, which is kind of mean, but at the same time, I think it's a little inaccurate that it's this far away from the third team. Some of these, I mean, maybe you should grab them early. These are pretty good odds. At 200-1, you have the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans. Are the Titans that far away from possibly winning a Super Bowl? Yeah, I think so. Are the Jaguars? No. It should be about half that. They should be somewhere in the 100 range. But it is what it is. So, you know, Jacksonville and Tennessee know that you're building up, but according to Bovada and their sports book, they don't see it happening this year. You got the Redskins at 125. All these are in a scale to 1. And what these mean basically is, like, at 125 to 1 would be you win $125 for every $1 you put down. So you put down $1,000, you'd get $125,000 back if you're Washington Redskins, or if the Washington Redskins. They may not be your favorite team, but at those odds, maybe you want to take a shot. But if they were to win the Super Bowl, and that's what they currently are. I think this is good all the way till the end of July at like 11 p.m. or something like that, and then they'll probably reset some of them because by then we'll know some training camp stuff. At 100, the Buccaneers, 75 is Cleveland, Oakland at 66-1, the Rams, Chargers, Jets, and Texans, and the Bears are all at 50-1. I don't know. I wouldn't group all them in that general area there. I mean, you know, the Rams could turn it around. They got a great defense. If Nick Foles turns out to be better than Sam Bradford, which means plays an entire year, then I don't know. The Rams can make a run at it. They're in a really bad division to try to do that. You know, the Texans, they figure out their quarterback issues, and Arian Foster runs like he did before. I wouldn't put them at 50-1. But, you know, it's their opinion. They also have the Saints, Lions, Panthers, and Falcons. That's just mean. You got three from the same division, all at 40-1. And one of those three, you have pegged to win the division. So they're kind of telling you, NFC South fans, that it ain't happening. I disagree. If you make the playoffs, you have a chance. Some people have a better chance than others, but it is what it is. Now we get into some of the surprises. And I'll go over some of my sleeper teams later on this summer. But you got the 49ers, the Vikings, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, the Bengals, and the Bills that they all have at 33-1. I don't know. I just don't see it. And they got the Giants at only 28-1. I don't know. Seems like, I mean, the Bills have got to figure out their offense. But they got a great defense. The Bengals are emerging. I think they're better than the Bills. The Chiefs could be interesting. Depends on Alex Smith, I think, and some of the holes in the defense. As good as their defense is, they still have issues. Miami is an emerging team still to me. I look forward to them doing some big things. I think Ryan Tannehill is going to develop into a top 10 guy this year. We'll see about that. But like I said, the Giants added 28-1, so they're kind of in that group. Then we kind of get into our top 10. I think it's 11 teams, but there's a tie. At 25-1, they have the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Cardinals. I don't know why you'd put those three together. The Steelers have the potential to win it this year. To me, the Ravens are one of the top three teams in the AFC. And the Cardinals, if Carson Palmer plays more than 10 games this year, which I know you can't help a knee injury like that, a non-contact one. But if Carson Palmer plays as solid as he was, I'd put them almost 10-1. I put the Ravens at probably 8-1. But, you know, Bovada's allowed to do what they want to do. They also have at 20-1 the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm just not seeing it. Chip Kelly is going for broke on this one, and I feel like he's you know, they're going to take his room key from him. That's what's going to happen with Chip Kelly. He is went for broke at the casino, and I feel like they're going to take his room key and carefully place him outside the glass door. Maybe it works out for you, Chip. I'm not seeing it. It's hard to buy into what you're trying to do there because it's not even organized chaos. It's just ridiculous chaos. But, once again, it is what it is. It's just their opinion. To round it out at 12-1, the Denver Broncos, I told you I think I would put them down the 20 range because I just don't see it. They got the Dallas Cowboys at 10-1. Rondo McClain's not going to matter as far as that thing. To me, the only issue, the big issue is, can the defense improve? They got guys coming back from injury, so that should help, including Sean Lee. And is it really going to matter who the running back is in this scheme? Yes, they do have probably the best offensive line in the league, but Darren McFadden is not quite a DeMarco Murray. Maybe you can see a resurgence and run like he did in college. I don't know. We'll have to see on that one, but it's very unlikely that that happens. So to have them, that's about right. You got the Patriots at 9-1, the Colts at 8-1, Seattle is 13-2, which is basically like 6.5-1, and then at 6-1 the Packers. So let's see. According to, if I were to go based off the list they have here, they pretty much have the Packers and the Colts would be who they would pick to be in the Super Bowl currently, with Seattle and New England getting knocked out the game before. I can see that. And then having the next best teams in the NFC and AFC, Dallas and Denver, maybe. We'll have to see on that. And, of course, you can go to sports.bovada.lv if you want to check out their betting lines and the such. I appreciate them allowing me to use their information. But, you know, go on there if you want, if you're so inclined and you want to put some money on your team, or there's just a line that really interests you. And, of course, Joseph Sparty here with Impact Media is our resident guru with sports lines and things like that. So if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, you can always send them in to us here, and we'll let Joseph field those and get them back to you. Maybe we'll try to line him up one day and just have most of a show dedicated to those sorts of things. But as we move along here on Impact Media's End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show, and for all you guys that are tuning in currently for Falcons Zone, we're going to get to that just on the other side of this. I did want to go over the win totals for each team. And I don't know, some of these are going to be really hard. I heard Colin do this the other day with some college ones, and I tend to agree on 4 of the 5, he said. But his show, his prerogative. I'm just going to go down the list pretty much. Arizona, they got an 8.5 win. I think he took the over. It could be 9, but Carson Palmer stays healthy. Arizona's right back in the playoff mix for sure. They got the Falcons at 8.5. I say take the under. I think they're going to go 8-8 this year currently. Of course, I haven't been out to the live scrimmages and practices yet. As soon as I go out there, I'll have a better perspective. But from what I'm hearing and what I've seen up to this point, 8-8 is probably what they're looking at. They got Baltimore at 9. I think that's a push. Don't take the over, don't take the under. I think 9's right about where they're at. They're in a hard division. They got to play Pittsburgh. They got to play Cleveland, who has a good defense. And they got to play, I believe, Cincinnati's the other team. So, rough schedule. They're going to beat each other up a little bit. 9 is pretty good. They're probably going to win the division at 9-7. Could win 10. I would, if I was betting, which I'm not, but if I was betting, I would take the push on that one. They got the Buffalo Bills at 8.5. Take the under. They're going to go about 7-9. They're still going to improve. Rex Ryan, if he ever finds a quarterback, is going to be a beast. But they're still playing for wild cards in that division, as long as Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft are all Patriots associates. You got Carolina at 8.5. Take the under. 7-9 is probably about what they're looking. Chicago Bears at 7. It's such a tough number. I would almost tell you to take the push on that one as well. But I'm going to throw it out there. It's actually, you actually got a probably one of the best odds on the sheets I'm looking at, too, if you take the over. I think you take the over. I think they win 8 games. Maybe. Cincinnati at 8.5. I think you take the under. I think they go 8-8. Because we go back to Baltimore. I think Baltimore's going to win the division at 9. So, I don't know. Cincinnati could win 9 and lose the tiebreaker, I guess. So, no, they got it 8.5. I take the under. I think they're going to win 8. The Dallas Cowboys at 9.5. Take the under. Because they're going to win 9. And that's only if the running game works. If the running game doesn't work, they're going to win about 7. Because the run game's going to win them too. At the Cleveland Browns at 6.5. If Josh McCown's their quarterback, take the over. If Johnny Manziel's their quarterback, sorry, Johnny, but I just am not seeing it, to take the under. So whoever starts, there you go. McCown, take the over. Johnny, take the under. You have Denver Broncos at 10. Take the under. They're looking at probably 8 wins. Detroit at 8. I take the over. I see 8 to 9 wins for them. You can, you know what? Better yet, take the push at 8. They lost Ndamukong Suh. I got to see what's going to be up the middle for them because they lost pretty much almost every interior defensive lineman they had. Didn't really re-sign anybody, so we'll have to see where that's at. So actually, take the push on that one. You got the Green Bay Packers at 11. Take the over. They got 12 this year. They're probably going to be in the Super Bowl. If not them, it's Seattle. One or the other. It's going to come down to them again, I believe. At least currently. So take the over on them. They're going to win 12. The Houston Texans, 8.5. Take the under. Probably looking at 6 or 7 again until they figure out the quarterback thing. Or Ryan Mallett steps up and plays like somebody who's actually learned from Tom Brady. Besides, their defense is going to win them a handful of games. The Indianapolis Colts at 11. Take the over. They are looking at probably 12 wins, possibly 13. Not sure yet, but they are in the AFC South, arguably and statistically one of the worst in the league currently, unfortunately, because they share a division with Houston, Jacksonville, and Tennessee. It is what it is. That's no shot at those teams. They know where they are. But they also, the AFC South plays the NFC South, as I've said many times on the show. So you're going to get two bad divisions beating up on each other. I think the Colts are going to win 12 or 13 games. Take the over. Jacksonville Jaguars, 5.5. Take the over. It may be 6, but 6 is more than 5.5, so take the over. I got to look at their schedule, though, and I really want to see some development this year because if there's a few people that develop, a few of the people that I'm looking at that fill in the key roster roles that were missing last year, then, you know, 7-8 wins is very doable. And I do believe that Gus Bradley needs to win probably at least 6 to keep his job. Even though he's doing a great job, it's just it's been 3 years and pretty much the same win total. So it is what it is. He's another one that, you know, maybe him and Jay Gruden swap. And he goes to Washington, Jay Gruden comes to Jacksonville. Who knows? I hope it doesn't happen, but regardless, take the over on the 5.5. They're going to win at least 6. And I haven't put all this together to make sure that everybody's not winning ridiculous amounts, just going through each one. The Kansas City Chiefs, they have it 8.5. Take the under. They're going to win 6 or 7. They're in division with Peyton. Unless they can step up and win 8, then and put some pressure on Denver, then it's just not going to happen. Miami at 8.5. I say take the under because they're going to win 8. They're going to go 8-8. They're emerging. They could possibly win a wild card, could win that 9th game, win a wild card. But then again, you're still in division with the Patriots, so you're going to play for the wild card for sure. Minnesota Vikings, who everybody thinks is this emerging new badass team. They got 7.5. Take the under. I'm looking at about 6 with Adrian Peterson. Teddy Bridgewater coming along great. Patterson's kind of flopping a little bit, kind of like a fish on the deck. You know, it is what it is. I got them right around 6. They're going to get a pretty good draft pick, and more than likely Adrian Peterson will be on somebody else's team. The New England Patriots, they currently have, and I think it's frozen. I'm not quite sure, but I think it's frozen currently because they don't know about the Tom Brady situation, which does kind of impact this number to me. They got them at 10.5. I don't know how good Garoppolo is, but I'm being willing to bet he's not as good as Tom Brady, or they would have already told Brady to take your ball and go home, or at least take it somewhere else. At 10.5, with Brady, take the over. Without Brady for those games, take the under because they'll win 10. Probably 12 with, 10 without. Brady's good for more than that, but his presence alone will make sure they win about 10. The New Orleans Saints, they have it 8.5. I say take the under. They're probably 7 or 8, looking at 7 or 8, maybe 6, depending on how much of an overhaul they're actually going to go through with. The New York Giants at 8.5, take the under. They're going to be 7 or 8 as well. Same basic reason. We don't know how much of an overhaul they're doing, but we know they're doing one, so have to wait and see. The New York Jets at 7.5. They have a new head coach. They're trying to rebuild the defense. Still have no quarterback. Still have no run game. Don't really have the best receivers in the world. Take the under. The Jets are probably looking at 4 or 5 wins. They're in a bad division again. They're in a division with people that will beat them up. No offense, no real quarterback, no run game, and you're going against Buffalo, you're going against Miami, and you're going against the Patriots. Arguably 3 of the top 10 defenses in the league. Probably top 8 when you actually look at numbers. So Jets, 7.5, under. Oakland Raiders, 5.5. I'd love you guys to win more than that, but unfortunately, I'm going to say take the under. They're probably looking 3 or 4 again, getting another good draft pick, and probably having a different GM, which is unfortunate because Reggie McKenzie is one of the smartest guys in the league. I don't think it's entirely his fault, but anybody looking for a GM, Reggie McKenzie will probably be available next offseason. Once again, it's not his fault, but they went through enough coaches, so it's just they're either going to sell the team, which I really doubt, or they're going to move them, or they're going to try to move them to St. Louis or L.A. or Jupiter for all we know. That whole debacle is not helping their franchise. They need to figure it out. Philadelphia Eagles, they have it 9.5. Take the under. It's, like I said, this is not even organized chaos. It looks like you threw darts at the wall, or I don't know. I've yet to figure out Chip Kelly's motives here, so at 9.5, definitely take the under. The Steelers, you got an 8.5. Let's see, I said Baltimore wins the division at 9 or 10 wins, so Pittsburgh probably has 8 or 9. I think they're closer to 8-8 than they are 9 and 7, so take the under. San Diego Chargers at 8. Take the under. They're not going to have Antonio Gates for the first 4 games. They might win 2 of those, but that means they need 6 victories out of the rest of them, and they're in the same division with the Chiefs, Broncos, and Raiders, so kind of the third team already. San Francisco 49ers at 7 wins. I think that's about right. I think you take the push there. It could be 6 or 7, but I'll say it's 7. Take the push. If they allow you to bet the push. Regardless, if they don't allow you to take the push, then don't bet on it. The Seattle Seahawks at 11. Go north. Definitely take the over. I think they're going to win 12, 13 games. They're going to be the top seed. Probably back in the Super Bowl, more than likely. It depends on how healthy they are as opposed to Green Bay. The St. Louis Rams, as we round these out here, at 8. I think you take the under. I think they're looking at 6 or 7 as well, unless Nick Foles steps up and plays jam out amazing, because they do have Todd Gurley. They do have some of the other weapons that they've had for a couple years. Now they have a quarterback that's healthy enough to possibly get them the ball. You know, Rams could surprise some people, but they're in division with Seattle, so they're playing for a wild card already too. Do I think they could win a wild card? They're not quite there yet. Not quite there. St. Louis fans, don't hate on me. You know, you're close. You're Buffalo or Miami. You're right on the cusp of taking a wild card spot. And like I said, all you got to do is make the playoffs, and then you can go on from there. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they have at 6 wins. They've done some stuff to help their defense out. Jameis has 2 of the best targets in Mike Evans and... Oh, I just forgot his name. I'd apologize for forgetting your name, too. But, 6 is about right. Take the push there. Tennessee Titans at 5.5, under. Washington Redskins at 6.5, under. Same reason. These are franchises. Tennessee understands that they're at the bottom, they need to work up. Washington doesn't realize that they're at the bottom and need to move up. So until Washington figures it out, go under on 6.5 for them. Tennessee, I think you're going to win. I hope you win more than, I hope you win 4 or 5 games, but that's probably what you're looking at. So that's all the – thanks to Bovada for the information on that one as well. And when we come back from the break, we'll be in Falcon Zone for sure. I know you guys are looking forward to getting into Falcon Zone. Got a few things I want to talk about with that. But for right now, we're headed to break. And that's right, hands are in the air. Everybody in the studio right now, including Reggie Walker, all the way out on the West Coast. Hi, Reggie, we can see your hands up. It is time for Falcon Zone here on Blog Talk Radio. Got some stuff we do want to get to, just some things here or there. Got some news and notes about a Falcons cheerleader, Asante Samuel back in the news. And then some of the players have, and their recent accolades. First, I want to get into this thing, and we had this debate on Revolution Zone on Tuesday, me and Sonny Clark from the Texas Revolution, where the Allen Event Center over there, where the team plays, has the Texas Revolution indoor football team, who recently made it to the championship. Didn't quite win, but they made it to the championship. You got the Allen Americans, who are the minor league hockey team that plays in the same arena, who just won their third championship in a row, which is really hard to do in the minor leagues, especially because you never have the exact roster every year. You know, people always get called up and sent back down, and, you know, even in a given week, you may have 12 different rosters. And then, of course, the indoor soccer team over there is just exploding on the scene and doing all kinds of great things. So you know, it turns into a great arena. And I was saying that over here, now that the Hawks have the new owner that happened right before the draft, he was quoted as saying that they're either going to redo Phillips Arena because it's not up to league standards, or they're going to build a new arena, which would mean 3 new arenas for the pro sports teams, and at least Gwinnett Arena that's still there. I'm not saying Gwinnett Arena needs to be redone. I think it's actually the best stadium we have currently. And that's no knock on Turner Field, the Georgia Dome. or Phillips Arena. I just feel like it's created for any kind of atmosphere to where there's not a bad seat. There's always great things going on over there. And if you notice, everything from the circus to concerts to most sporting events happen at the Gwinnett Arena. Maybe the new Phillips Arena will actually look like Gwinnett. The new dome, of course, or not really the new dome, the new Falcons Field will kind of resemble it a little bit, but it's got a different kind of roof. But, you know, the main thing I wanted to get to with that is, isn't it amazing how in a lot of sports cities, the more popular arena is the smaller one? I mean, I'm all happy that all these people are getting new stadiums and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time, you know, they're not necessarily necessary. The Falcons are doing it so they can get a Super Bowl. The Braves are doing it because the Falcons are doing it. And apparently now the Hawks are doing it because the Braves and Falcons are getting new arenas. And that's just my opinion on all that, but at the same time, that's exactly the way I see it, is what it is. So kudos to Gwinnett Arena and the people that built that and run that on all the amazing things they do. I've seen a ton of events there and look forward to seeing a ton more. Maybe we can get another indoor team up and get them to play over there. But moving on, because there is a couple things I want to get to and don't want to run out of time. You know, Julio Jones was NFL Network called him the 13th best player of 2014, I believe. Pretty fair, put him right in there. A lot of people say that he could be the division's most dangerous player. Even if he is, what does that matter? Julio goes out there and he plays his style of game. He racks up the numbers. He helps this team. Him and Roddy are a great 1-2 punch. That's what I don't get, is like people are always trying to find accolades to give people, and it's well deserved for Julio if he is the most dangerous player. But being the most dangerous player or having some sort of moniker like that doesn't help you win championships. People don't go, well, he's the most dangerous player. Let's just automatically concede this game. Let's look at Ken Shamrock, for that matter. For years, and we're talking probably 15, 20 years, he's carried the moniker of the world's most dangerous man. And for probably 15 or 16, probably 18 of those 20 years, he deserved it. Because in an octagon, he is dang near impossible to defeat. But if you saw him against Kimbo Slice a couple weeks ago, he gave it the best effort he did, but you can tell the wear and tear on his body. He just is not the world's most dangerous man anymore. Could he still beat the crap out of me? Probably. Probably me and five of my friends. But I don't want to push something like that. I'm just saying that no matter what the moniker you carry is, you know, like Matt Ryan is Matty Ice, because of how he puts daggers in people, you know, late in the fourth quarter with comebacks and you know, nails in the coffin type deal. Well, that's fine and everything, but only one playoff win. So, not saying it's all on Matt or anything like that, because I still think he's one of the best in the league. He gives the Falcons a chance to win each and every game, along with Julio the same way, as long as he can stay healthy. But as far as being the most dangerous player, I don't know. If you want to give it to him, fine. If you don't, fine. I don't know. It just kind of gets tiring to hear. This week, he's the most dangerous player. Next week, he's the top wide receiver and all that. Well, it's fine to be the best, but at the same time, you got to put the results up, and having all those accolades doesn't put wins on the board. So Julio knows this. Julio's not worried about any of this kind of stuff. He puts his head down. He does his job. And catches football better than pretty much anybody else in this league anyway. So, congratulations to him on being the number 13 on the list. And look forward to seeing him put on a show this year, because he has a grit and determination. The Falcons franchise turned 50 the other day. A lot of people don't remember that. 50 years ago. I don't remember that, because I wasn't here. Not like in Atlanta here. I just wasn't born yet. But so they turned 50. So what have they done in 50 years? Well, they've been to the Super Bowl, and they've had a long list of great players. But in 50 years, they haven't had an era that really defined them, unless you count the Jamal Anderson, Chuck Smith era, or possibly the Nobis era. Probably one of those would be the more prominent ones you could remember. So I kind of think they're in the middle of this run right now they're on, where they're only going to get better. They've kind of reinvented the wheel, which most of the time people wonder why you reinvent the wheel, but at the same time, the Falcons needed to. They're on the way up. The same way I talked about Jacksonville earlier, the same way I talked about Tennessee, Washington. When you realize that you're on your way to the bottom, you can fix it quick, or you can hit and try to bounce up. They tried to fix it, and they've actually moved themselves back up. They're at a good time in the division because Tampa's under a new scheme. They got a new rookie guy they're trying to figure out with Jameis Winston. So they're in rebuild mode. The Saints are kind of in rebuild mode, but they're kind of hanging around. The same thing with Carolina. They're kind of hanging around. But nobody has reached up and grabbed the brass ring of this division. Now's the best time to do that. So in turn of 50, and this being the 50th year as a franchise, how about a playoff win? How about two playoff wins? Because I'm not sure how this division is going to shake out right now. I do think it's between probably the Falcons and the Saints. I feel like the Panthers are going to take a step back. Could be wrong. I was wrong last year and the year before that. But I kind of see it that way. It's going to be a tight jumble between those three. And the Buccaneers are not going to be as bad as people think either. They're going to be pretty good. There's not much difference. And they're going to let Jameis kind of make some plays. So, you know, we'll see about that. But what would be good in this 50th year? Like I said, how about two playoff wins? I'm good with just making the playoffs, but if we can win one and then win another one. Most of the time, two wins gets you either in the NFC Championship or gets you in the Super Bowl, depending on how well you did. An NFC Championship game, though, I think is a great thing to aim for. Obviously, aim for the Super Bowl, but I think the fans would be happy with the NFC Championship appearance. Of course, getting into some of the other accolades. Like I said, I like accolades and everything. I don't like all the monikers that people come up with. But this is a good accolade as Jacob Tammy, one of the tight ends that were signed over the offseason, was inducted into the Kentucky Pro Hall of Fame. So congratulations to him on that. Devin Hester was nominated for a 2015 ESPY Award. That's the ESPN Awards. It will be coming up in the next week or so. I think it's over the weekend, maybe Sunday. But of course, he is up for best record-breaking performance when he Deion Primetime walked into the end zone after his 20th return that I have on video somewhere that I need to post because it was a pretty fun night to be there. Another note I wanted to get to was a Falcons cheerleader is up for Miss South Carolina. I'll say congratulations to her. Is one of the rookie cheerleaders. It is Susie. So good luck to her on being Miss South Carolina, which would be nice to go over into enemy territory and win an award. And then, of course, I want to talk about Asante Samuel, who has started a record label called the 80s Nation Records. And he actually wants to sign his former teammate, William Moore, to the record label because apparently William Moore has a handful of singles and raps that he's done over the years. I'm going to check iTunes as soon as we get off of here and see if I can find some of them for you guys. But I think that'd be really cool. Doesn't necessarily have to sign him, but it'd be nice to hear William Moore do that. Maybe the Falcons could feature it somewhere during a game or during the year somehow. Or maybe help him get a CD out and have a big release party and let everybody enjoy what William Moore's up to. But definitely want to give out the virtual high five to Asante Samuel for starting the record label. It's a passion he's always had. And if it's anything like the passion for football he had, it should do great things. So look forward to hearing more from Asante on that. And, of course, good luck to William Moore on his music. In case he does sign with Asante, or whether he doesn't, whether he just does his own thing still. But that's pretty much all I have for this week here on Falcon Zone. Appreciate you guys joining us. Of course, we'll see. It'll be 2 weeks before we're back with the End Zone Falcons on Super Pro Football Show. We hope to have Reggie and the coach back on and maybe some other surprise guests. We'll have the tailgate report, of course. We'll let you guys know who's going to be on with that. And, of course, here on Impact Media, next Thursday will be Jaguar Zone for all you Jaguar fans. And we'll have a tailgate report on that one as well. But for Impact Media and Blog Talk Radio, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. It's been fun, guys. We'll see you in a couple weeks.